Greetings, my little oddities. Welcome to Odd Tuesdays. This is Monica Caraway from Small Biz Thoughts. Today, Carl talks to Jessica Davis, the executive editor at MSP Mentor, about the resources they make available for managed service providers. MSP Mentor recently named their annual top 250 MSPs, of which Carl was included. We are also joined today by Amy Babinchek in our Oddball segment, and I'll be sharing some tech news brought to you by neowin.net. First up, upcoming tech events happening around the place. SharePoint's SP TechCon is on in Austin, Texas, February 8th through the 11th. Information can be found at sptechcon.com. The Managed Services in a Month Applying the Book online course is on over at Great Little Seminar starting March 17th. Visit greatlittleseminar.com for course description and registration details. The ASCII Success Summit tours continue in Miami, Florida, February 18th through the 19th. Visit ASCII.com for more information. A Global Technology Distribution Council event is on in Miami, February 19th. Go to gtdc.org/events for more information. The IBM Interconnect 2015 is on in Las Vegas, February 22nd to the 26th. More information can be found at ibm.com. The Globalization of SMB webinar series continues with another event on February 24th. You can register for free at bit.ly/globalSMB. Lastly, the SMB Nation Office 365 tour is on February 26th in Los Angeles, California. Go to o365tour.smbnation.com for more details. You can find the full listing of tech events happening in Carl's weekly newsletter. Just visit carlsnews.com and sign up. And now, let's head off to Carl and Jessica Davis.
I am joined now by Jessica Davis, who is the executive editor at MSP Mentor. And I think everybody should be familiar with mspmentor.net. And if not, go check it out. They have some, I guess, sister publications as well. So welcome, Jessica. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do at MSP Mentor?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me on today, Carl. I really appreciate it. And MSP Mentor has been around since 2008, I believe, before I joined it for sure. But the mission of MSP Mentor is really to be the news and information site for managed service providers. So we like to cover the news that is coming out of vendors that serve managed service providers, also any business information that can be of use to managed service providers, all the platform news from companies like Kaseya, Enable, MaxFocus, and LabTech, ConnectWise, Autotask. I hope I'm not missing anybody who's going to be mad at me, but we do like to provide real information about the tools that managed service providers use, as well as some of the best practices for their businesses, and be a connection site as well so that they can find peer group and all kinds of information to help them run their businesses.
Alrighty, and where do you get the information? Is it primarily that you monitor their press releases, or you look at their websites, or you can't possibly consume all of their webinars and blog posts because there's approximately 7 billion of those things?
Right. So we do make it a practice of regularly going to industry events so we can cover all the news and make contact with managed service providers across the industry. So we're not just talking to the vendors, but we're talking to MSPs about their experience with different vendors as well. And we also have relationships with all these different vendors so we can find out when they are about to announce a new feature or a new update to a platform. So we can bring the news to our readers as it happens.
All right. And you have some events that you do on a regular basis, things that you put out. You have a couple of lists. Right now you have the MSP Mentor 501 list.
MSP Mentor 501 list is our biggest research project of the year. And we solicit entries from MSPs across the country and around the world. These managed service providers who participate are then ranked in a list of the top managed service providers around the world. And it's a secret formula that we use to rank these managed service providers. I can't tell you all the details, or they would have to kill me. But I can tell you that a lot of it is based on annual recurring revenues. As we all know, recurring revenues are a big part of being a managed service provider. That's what distinguishes being a managed service provider from being a VAR. That's the main focus. There are other factors, but that's the main focus.
It makes sense that money is a piece of it. But is this something where when you're trying to decide ranking, is it completely automated, or do you have a panel of judges who sit down and say, well, this person does this and this company does that?
This list is very comprehensive, and we do have a lot of people working on it in the background. And there are many questions on this survey, and we appreciate everyone who goes to the effort of filling it out for us so that we can provide the industry with really a snapshot of what's going on in the managed services space for any particular year. For example, last year was the first year we asked whether service providers were charging by user or by device, because that's something that's been changing in the last year or so. And I think we're going to see even more people charging by user rather than device this year.
So that list goes out, and then you announce it next month, is that it?
Over the course of February, we will be working to clean the data, look at all the entries, put together the list itself, put together some of the sub-lists. There are maybe half a dozen sub-lists that come from this.
Okay.
And all these will be published out to our site, mspmentor.net. in March, and there will also be a webcast associated with the release of this information.
And so folks can subscribe to your blog, and that way they get updates whenever you post stuff, and when the news comes out about this, they'll certainly get that information.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then you also have the MSP Mentor 250.
We were really honored to have you as one of our 250 for 2014. Our MSP 250 list is really a lot of fun. It lets us look at some of the top experts in the managed services market, the top entrepreneurs, experts, and coaches and consultants, really the people who managed service providers should look to for information about the industry, about business best practices. This is a list of real mentors in the industry, and so it's a great resource for someone looking for help in getting their business to the next level or even getting into the business at all. And I know that certainly, Carl, in your case, your reputation as an author and a consultant in the industry really distinguished you and made you a part of this list, and we were really glad to have you on the list this year. And this list itself is a great general resource for people who are new to the industry or looking to go to the next level.
Well, thank you. Obviously, I'm very honored to be on that list. And would you say that this is something that if somebody is new to the business, that they really should go seek out this list and say, okay, which of these people can help me move my business to the next level and maybe skip a few of the hard lessons that are ahead of me?
Absolutely. And you will see on this list, the list includes not just consultants and coaches, but people who are MSPs themselves at this point, who maybe have made a name for themselves by mentoring other managed service providers or by being a part of an industry peer group. There are also vendors on this list as well who have really made an effort to make themselves available to managed service providers who are looking for extra help. So this list really provides that kind of comprehensive set of experts, really, for service providers.
All right. So I guess the other thing that people need to be aware of is that you have some sister websites, and how connected are you to those?
We do. We are very closely tied to Talking Cloud, which is a website directed to cloud service providers, cloud brokers, cloud aggregators, and we also have the VARGuy website, which is focused on the reseller market and the value-added reseller market. And my great colleagues over at those two sites, Charlene O'Hanlon runs the VARGuy and CJ Arlotta runs Talking Cloud. I talk to them on a daily basis. We are all part of the Penton Technology Group at this point, and we have a number of sites for IT developers, particularly around Windows, that we are also working with. And Penton Technology Group just last week announced the acquisition of another group of websites, which includes Data Center Knowledge, which is a great website for anyone looking at the business of data centers and running data centers. It's going to be a great complementary addition to the whole group.
So it's interesting, because earlier you mentioned that, you know, one of the dividing elements between an MSP and a VAR is recurring revenue. A VAR doesn't necessarily rely on recurring revenue. A managed service provider should necessarily rely on recurring revenue. At the same time, I can imagine that the folks who run data centers and the folks who do cloud services, there's some overlap there, but clearly some distinctions as well. Do you think there's a lot of overlap in the audiences between these websites?
I think there's some, and that's fine. I think as far as cloud services are concerned, we're talking about a range of companies. Maybe some companies operate their own data centers, and maybe some companies do not, but they offer a range of services in the cloud. When I think about data center knowledge, you look at how they cover data centers. It's real estate, power, and those kinds of really tangible resources, and they cover that industry really well. They cover data center openings and all kinds of stories around that kind of thing. There are a number of, I don't know if they're mutual funds, but that specialize in just data centers, which is a different business.
So do folks always just get started by going to mspmentor.net and then?
I think that's where everyone should start their day every day. Definitely at mspmentor.net.
And you also have a lot of blog activity where people participate. They don't just read like you would read the Washington Post. There are also places where they can put in comments and give feedback and have a different perspective on things.
That's true. And, you know, we have introduced in the last, I'd say, 6 months or so, program called Idea Exchange, where we're looking for people who are IT service providers and people who are consultants in that area, but not vendors, to write regular features as one of our Idea Exchange experts. And that has been very well received as well. It's been great to get that kind of I live this every day perspective. It's invaluable.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time today. I certainly appreciate it. And I think that we will have you back from time to time to see what's new and what's going on with MSP Mentor.
I'd love to join you. Thanks so much for inviting me, Carl.
Now for today's Oddballs segment, we welcome Amy Babinchek. Amy talks about how to analyze what your personality brings to your MSP business.
Hello, everyone. In my Oddball segments, I mostly talk about how to have a business that provides the lifestyle you want. After all, every business is a lifestyle business, because if it wasn't providing the lifestyle you wanted, you would do something to change it. Now, one of the things I've been thinking of lately is how every business has a personality, and that personality usually reflects the owner's personality. The business takes on your personality. If you are a person that's laid back and calm, then your business and your employees will be the same. If you're a person that's high energy and intense, then your business and your employees will be the same. You'll also end up with a different client base because clients tend to hire people, in this case your company, that are like themselves too. This means that every once in a while you should take a minute to look around and see what your personality has brought to your business. Look at the good and the bad of it. None of us is perfect. What are the strengths that your personal style brings to your business? What are the weaknesses? In my business, I bring an extreme sense of responsibility. This is both good and bad. It means to work here, you're going to have that same trait. For me, it drives me to succeed. I naturally take responsibility for things and rise up to lead. It also means that I can't stand it when others tell me what to do. This is why I want to lead. When this trait that I select for because it's important to me gets implemented in people that aren't me, we'll call those people employees, we can really end up with a situation where we're trying to herd cats. It's really great that we've got people that stand up and seek out responsibility, but it's something that's not so great too. That's where some careful management comes in. I'm telling my newly anointed manager that he needs to lead, not manage, and to help his staff without letting them know that he's doing it. This puts him in the foreground, being the example to follow, and also in the background, propping up everything so that our techs have an amazing foundation to work from, where everything just sort of falls into place for them. It's an interesting balancing act, and I have to say that I'm enjoying watching him grow and stumble into this role. The other effect that my trait has on the business is that we've got a desire to learn new things and do new things. This trait comes from the fact that I'm very easily bored. I tend to hire people that are the same way. So I've got to build that into my business model too. How does that work? Well, I always say we are our own user group, and we've scheduled all the Monday evenings in March for Azure training. This means that I'm buying dinner for the whole gang every Monday. We'll start at 4 p.m. and go each evening till 7, 8, or 9 p.m., depending on how compelling that day's content turns out to be. We'll watch videos, do labs, banter about what we learned, which clients it's going to work for, and which there's no way it will ever work for. In the end, we'll all know more about Azure, and everyone will be on the same path to implementation. Almost as importantly, we'll have met a staff need. They need to learn new things and do new things so they can bring them to our clients while they'll take responsibility for the benefit our clients will get from this technology. And as a not-so-small bonus, since we all normally work from home, it gives us a chance to get together and poke at each other like siblings, which holds our corporate culture together as one. Your business probably isn't like mine, but it most certainly has a personality that is based upon traits that you have. One of the hurdles on your path to success will be to capitalize on the strength and minimize on the weakness that this trait has brought. I'm Amy Babinchak, owner of Harbor Computer Services in Third Tier. As a wrap-up, I wanted to let you know that I've got a new newsletter coming out that you might want to sign up for. It's going to contain news and research that we obtained from government agencies on new hacks and exploits that we aren't allowed to publish in a blog. You can find the sign-up form on any of the pages at Third Tier's website, thirdtier.net, or on our Facebook page. You'll see that I've cleverly named it Super Secret News. Now go capitalize on your strengths.
And now for today's tech news, brought to you by neowin.net. On January 21st, Microsoft held a press conference where they discussed the next chapter of Windows and showcased a lot of new features that are coming in Windows 10, such as Cortana integration and a new web browser codenamed Spartan. While some things were discussed in detail, others were only briefly passed to the audience, such as the free upgrade to Windows 10 for users on Windows 7 and 8.1, quote, for the first year. Some people have interpreted this as a one-year free Windows license, which is incorrect. Microsoft announced on the Windows blog that it will continue to keep it current for the supported lifetime of the device at no cost. This means that any consumer that currently owns a Windows 7 or 8.1 license will get to upgrade for free and will also receive further updates without paying any extra. It doesn't matter if it's an OEM license or a separately purchased one, but Windows 10 won't be free for new users of Windows that only tried the technical preview. There is a catch here, however, as not all editions of Windows will be free. Businesses will not be getting a free upgrade to Windows 10. Microsoft has also used the term Windows as a Service on their announcements, leading to speculation about Windows moving to a subscription-based model in the future. Even if Microsoft will offer a Windows subscription in the future, it's likely that it won't be the only option. You only need to look at the current Office offering to see that you can opt out for a one-time purchase of Office 2013 or an Office 365 plan based on your needs. When Mozilla announced that they would be dropping Google as the default search provider for Firefox and would be switching to Yahoo, All eyes turned to Google to see how this would impact their usage and, more importantly, impact their bottom line. Now that the transition to Yahoo has been underway for Firefox users for 2 months, we can now begin to see the impact it is having on Google thanks to statistics from StatCounter. The site, which measures search usage share in the U.S., is reporting that for the first time since 2008, Google's search market share is below 75%. Yahoo likely paid a massive premium to get the default search position away from Google, as it has previously reported that Google paid around $300 million for the rights to be the default search provider. For Google, this represents a big concern, as that company generates a significant portion of its revenue from displaying advertisements from searching. By Yahoo now eating Google's lunch when it comes to searches, this results in less advertisements viewed for Google, which translates into less revenue. Seeing that Bing is powering Yahoo's search, this is also a win for Microsoft, as they are able to extract the metadata from additional searches to improve their engine. It will be curious to see how long this trend continues, as many expected Firefox users to switch the search preferences after the change was implemented, or they would drop Firefox and use Chrome. But seeing that does not seem to be the case, at least in the short term, only time will tell how much more Google's search share will drop now that Firefox is using Yahoo. The iPhone has always been a popular product. The device has been sought after in foreign markets where Apple has only recently found success in sales. So when Apple reports a record-selling quarter for iPhone sales, you know something went incredibly well. Announced just a day after Microsoft's quarterly earnings report, Apple is reporting iPhone sales to the total of 74.5 million units for its first quarter of 2015. That is a steep rise from the same period the year prior, when Apple reported 51 million iPhones being sold. The result in smartphone sales contributed to a 38% increase in profits for the company as a whole. The spike in sales is without a question owed to the launch of their pair of iPhone 6, which brought about two larger screen options to replace the former iPhone 5S and 5C. As sales would suggest, iPhone owners have been suffering from big screen envy due to Android and Windows phone devices that have begun to regularly top 5 inches in size. Apple's steep jump in iPhone sales also brings to question whether the company can close the large gap in market share between it and Samsung, the largest smartphone manufacturer in the world at this time. Should Apple find a way to maintain these kinds of sales numbers, we would have a heavy battle for smartphone dominance to keep an eye on. Google, Apple, Intel, and Adobe have finally agreed to a new settlement deal in an antitrust lawsuit by tech workers that accuse the companies of a secret agreement not to poach each other's employees. In the lawsuit that was filed in 2011, the plaintiffs claimed that the four tech giants were limiting job mobility in order to control the salaries of workers in the technology sector. When a settlement of $324.5 million was proposed in 2014, California District Judge Lucy Koh rejected it after one of the plaintiffs objected. Koh argued that the proposed figure was not enough to compensate for the lost salaries that the workers might have suffered as a result of the cold calling, referring to a similar case in 2011 involving Disney and Intuit. The new amount has not yet been disclosed, but Intel spokesman Chuck Molloy reportedly confirmed in an email that a new settlement has indeed been reached, although he's not able to share more details at this time. Reuters reports that the court documents will be published imminently and will offer a detailed explanation of the new settlement, as well as the final decision. However, Koh said it would need to be above $380 million in order to be proportionately equal to the Disney and Intuit one. Microsoft recently released a new app for iOS and Android to help you manage your inbox. Outlook, the massively popular email client for the desktop, now has an official home on Android and iOS. Apple appears to like the app, as they have featured it on the landing page under Best New Apps, which has helped the app climb the charts in the store. Currently, the app is sitting in the 15th position in the top free chart and has been climbing rapidly. The app appears to be resonating well with consumers. With over 1,200 reviews, the email app has a 4-star rating at this time. As for the Google Play Store, taking a look at those charts, Outlook is not anywhere to be found, even though it has over 2,500 reviews with an overall 4-star rating. This is not the first time Microsoft apps have done well in Apple's App Store. When its Office apps were released last year, they quickly jumped to the top of the charts. The email app is harder to sell to consumers than, say, Word or Excel, as an iOS already has an email application out of the box. So for Microsoft to win in this area, they have to prove that their app is better than the built-in solution. Based on how quickly it's climbing the charts, it appears that consumers are looking for alternatives to the Mail app, and the free Outlook app is providing strong competition. The FCC is looking to propose strong net neutrality rules for both broadband and wireless communications in the United States. ISPs will be classed as Title II carriers, and all will be right with the world. At least that's the gist of the commissioner's proposal, which was leaked by the Wall Street Journal. FCC head Tom Wheeler is expected to circulate the proposed rules ahead of a February 26 vote on the issue. If passed, the new rules represent a stunning reversal of the SEC's position, and many would argue the right thing to do. Not long ago, Wheeler, alongside the whole FCC, seemed to be in favor of paid prioritization, or so-called fast lanes, which would destroy net neutrality and allow rich companies to control traffic online. What's striking is that the FCC is also looking into enshrining net neutrality in the mobile internet market, an aspect that was deliberately left out of previous versions of the rules. And the commission is even looking to get a handle on paid peering arrangements, business deals between ISPs and companies that allow for better speeds for customers, but of which Netflix decried as extortion. If these new rules, which are expected to garner intense opposition from telecom lobbyists and politicians, do pass, they'll finally set the stage for the United States to push the internet and the web to its full potential. I'd like to thank NeoWin.net for today's tech news.
I want to invite everybody to check out our next class, which starts February 17th. It's on applying the book, Managed Services in a Month. So if you've read the book, you know part of what we do is we go through what you're doing, who your clients are, what you want your business to be, and there's a series of exercises that we execute. If you haven't read the book, trust me, it's worth doing whether you're already a managed service provider or if you want to convert from break-fix to managed services. So the exercises include looking at your clients, weeding them down, keeping the good ones, trying to figure out how to get more good ones, and then converting all the clients you keep into a managed service model. We'll go through writing a contract, getting it approved, lining up the three-tiered offering, everything you need to do to convert your business into managed services. The course includes an electronic copy of the book, Managed Services in a Month, and so we're going to use that as our textbook. So in this case, it'll be more like Managed Services in 5 weeks, but you absolutely can do this. Managed Services is the future. It's the way that all tech support is provided from now on, and if you're new to IT tech support, trust me, this is the thing that you want to do. So please check it out. Look at the classes over at greatlittleseminar.com. And this is Applying the Book, Managed Services in a Month.
On Monday, Carl announced that registrations are now being accepted to our annual SMB online conference. The 2015 theme this year is Time to Thrive. The world of small business consulting keeps changing. Small Business Server is long gone. Server 2003 will be end of life in July 2015. Windows 8 is almost gone. Cloud computing dominates. Hybrid cloud is evolving. Robotics, 3D printing, and other new technologies are entering the SMB market space. It is not obvious how a small technology consultant should make the most of this emerging environment. This conference will focus on the processes, procedures, and products you will need to be successful going forward. You survived the last 6 years, and now it's time to thrive. The first 50 people to register will receive registration for the full 3 days for just $99. Please visit SMB Online Conference to register, and do not miss that $99 price tag. Please join us on our next episode on February 17th. We will be joined by Social Ammo's Peter Kadick, who will talk about the lead generation work his company is doing for MSPs. And Rayanne Buccianico will join us in our Oddball segment. I look forward to having you join us then. Take care.